Hey, everybody, it's Sunny. I am talking to you from the iTunes feed. Go sign up at the Patreon, subbeacon.com. This week, it was just JBL and me. We were talking about my trip to Disney World, largely. A lot of Disney World talk. So if you're a Disney World fan, it's a good episode for you. And then we talked a little bit about all the old knives. On this week's episode, the episode that's going to be going up Friday at the Patreon, we're talking about The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, the new Nick Cage movie. The new Nick Cage movie where Nick Cage plays Nick Cage, movie about Nick Cage. On the bonus episode on Monday, we're going to be talking about, we're going to be doing like a Nick Cage draft. You know, everybody loves a good draft. So Nick Cage draft, that'll be fun. That'll be exclusive to the Patreon forever. Go sign up now, subbeacon.com, little as a dollar a month. Fun times.
Henry.
Celia.
It's been a long time.
They've opened the books on flight 127.
The hijackers had help from inside our station here in Vienna.
We need to find out if we had a mole.
Vic has me looking into flight 127.
So this is an interview. I thought you were here to see if we still had that old spark.
To old friends.
Oh, you can do better than that.
To old lovers.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Sub Beacon. I am Sunny Bunch, along with Jonathan V. Last. Vic Mattis is out this week. If you listened last week, he needs a break. He needs a week off.
He's resting comfortably.
He's resting at the home. Mary
the
Catherine
sanitarium.
Ham.
The sanitarium.
Mary Catherine Hamm is working on him on the Everything Everywhere All at Once front. She loved that movie, too. She's totally baffled as to what happened with our good friend Vic. But, you know, again, it's an ontological thing. You can't really get around those. All right. So just as a reminder, the Subbeacon, it's available on the Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe. Tell your friends. And don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. I haven't sent you guys payments in a few months because, you know, not
should we
little,
even mention the merchandise store anymore? I feel like we should just mention it during Christmas or something.
What we need is a new shirt. We need a new shirt. We need to figure out how to monetize the quadrants. That's what we need to do. We need to figure out how to monetize the quadrants to keep Vic happy in the Subbeacon. But anyway, what is going on in your life? JVL, how are you?
Santino, I am this close to my big life change.
Ooh.
But I don't want to talk about it because we're not there yet.
Can't talk about it yet.
Next week, I believe, if we tape a show on Thursday of next week, I'll be able to talk about it.
I think we should be taping Thursday of next
so,
week.
If we're it's taping Thursday on. Night... Then okay. We can talk about it because my okay. thing is Thursday afternoon.
Good luck with your surgery.
But how are you? Tell me all about Disney. Because when you texted me to say, I can't talk about this right now, I'm at the airport. And then 15 hours later texted me to say, I'm still at Dallas-Fort Worth Airport.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, oh my God.
It wasn't,
oh no,
it wasn't,
this is
it wasn't,
bad.
It wasn't quite that bad, but it was like, it was a solid, I think it was like 10 hours later. It was 10 hours later, but I wasn't at Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. I was at Love Field. Started the day. So for people who don't know, Dallas has two major airports, right?
There's Love Field is the Southwest airport.
And there's Love Field. So Dallas, DFW is where most everybody flies out of. We had a flight on United. We were flying from... We were flying from Dallas to Houston and then Houston to Orlando. And Love Field is basically just Southwest. I think they have some Alaska flights as well, but basically just Southwest. So we are at DFW and we get there and everything's copacetic. And then like basically as soon as we park the car, get a text message from United that says, hey, your flight's taking off. Your flight's 30 minutes delayed, which is not great because, you know, we've got an hour. We've got an hour in between flights, and we get there, and we check in, and we check our bags, because we're taking big bags of stuff. We check our bags. We get to the gate, and we get another text message. It says,
oh, hey, your flight's going to be an hour late. We're like, oh, that's no good. And then immediately got another text message from United that says, oh, sorry, your flight's only going to be 10 minutes late. So we're like, what is going on? What is going on with this? It turns out it was a mechanical issue, and the plane never came. Plane just never came. Plane just never came from wherever it was flying from to Dallas.
Did it crash in midair?
To Houston. Just never took off. Just never. It's just stayed on the... It's probably still there. They buried... They've cemented it to the ground. It's a monument to the failure of United.
Interesting. Interesting that they... the games they play with delays where they're always lying to you.
Yes.
Right? The minute they say there's a delay, you just assume they are... You have entered a world of bullshit.
If you get an announcement that there's a delay on your flight and you have a connecting flight, you need to start immediately looking for replacements, which is what we did. So we got on the phone with United and we're talking to the United people. Again, this is Thursday. This is Thursday morning. The flight was scheduled for like 12:30 p.m. Thursday. So Thursday morning, we're on the phone with United and they're like, there's no flights to get you. We can get you to Houston, but there's no flights from Houston to Orlando. I was like, okay, well, what if we flew somewhere else?
Hold on. And in theory, you should have, in theory, taken off from Dallas at 12:30 and landed in Orlando at what, 3?
3:30, something like that.
Okay.
3:30. So they're like, no, what we could do is fly you to Denver, and then
That's the other direction, isn't it?
You could take an early morning flight the next day. You'll get into Orlando like 11 a.m. or something like that. And of course, they were going to call Disney to refund the price for you, right?
So they were going to make that call. They said, we'll write you a doctor's note.
Exactly.
You'll get your money back from Disney. Don't worry.
You got to understand, we've got reservations at the hotel we're staying at, the Hotel Coronado, the Coronado Springs Resorts. I couldn't remember last time. Coronado Springs Resort's very nice. But we have reservations for Thursday through Sunday nights. Thursday through Sunday nights. We have tickets for the parks for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So like we're on a pretty rigid schedule here. This is not like maybe show up, maybe you don't.
Oh, I don't like this.
So I immediately got on the Southwest app. And I was like, what are the options out of Love? And found a direct flight from Love Field.
Wait, are you at Love or are you at
DFW? No, we're at DFW. Found a direct flight from Love to Orlando that left at like 7:30 at night.
Oh, boy.
Which puts us into Orlando at like 10:50. And, you know, then you got to get from the hotel to... Anyway. But anyway, we were like, whatever, we'll book that. I don't like to talk money on this show, as you know.
Last minute airfare from Love Field to Orlando.
Last minute
for
airfare
four.
From. I'll put it this way: the reason we booked United was because my wife has we had miles through my wife's credit card that got us there for free. Free flight.
Ooh.
Free flight. So it was.
Did
it,
that
you know,
transfer? Did you also get free Southwest flights?
Oh no! Southwest does not put people on other airlines. As the person on the other end of the line helpfully explained to me, we don't put people on Southwest flights, and Southwest doesn't put people on other flights. We don't partner with Southwest. Nobody partners with Southwest. That's because they're a good airline. So what ended up happening, and this is like the one reasonable thing I think that happened through this whole situation, is that. United refunded us the entire flight. We got all the miles back, all the points, you know, whatever. So in theory,
we could use them to not fly United again next time.
So we can use them. I'm just going to use them to get cash back on the $2,000 one way set of tickets that we bought to get to Orlando on time for the vacation to start.
Oof.
That's what happened. That was again, the way it works out, the way,
oh God, I'm sorry. That hurts.
So now here's the thing though, the way it works out, we actually, it's basically break even. The points that we used for United come out to about $2,000 cash back. It's slightly less. It's like $1,900 cash back, something like that. And we got a $2,000 one way flight. So it all worked out. We flew home for free. You could look at it that way. We flew home for free. But it was one of these just panic, like, you know what? Fuck it. We're doing it. We're doing it. We're booking this one way flight.
Making memories, children.
We're making this happen. So anyway, long story short,
Clark Griswold.
Very long story short.
We're going to Wally World.
We went to Wally World. We got to Orlando. We got to Orlando. Instead of getting to Orlando at like 4, like we were supposed to, instead of getting to our hotel at like 5, like we were supposed to, we got to our hotel at 1 in the morning.
Ooh.
So we could wake up at like 6:30 in the morning, so we could get to the park 30 minutes before it opens to the rabble, so we could get on the rides early. Because I don't know if you know this, but if you stay at a Disney resort, you get 30 minutes early entry.
Yeah, you do.
You get to... Anyway.
How were the kids through all this? Are they there yet? Are we there yet? How many million times were you asked what's happening?
As a reminder, I have a 3-year-old boy. I have a 6-year-old girl. They were actually... I'll give them credit. On the way out, they were pretty good. They held it together right up until we got to Orlando and we had to wait in a line to get on the shuttle to the
Mirrors.
We took the Mirrors shuttle to get to the Coronado Springs Tower, and the 3-year-old lost it at that point. He just had a full, like, I've never seen him have. He's generally a pretty even keeled guy, and he just was like laying on the ground doing the kicking in arms and screaming, and like never seen him do that before, but he had enough. I don't blame him. It's hard to blame him. So he fell asleep.
Did you join him at that point?
He fell asleep on the bus ride, which is like 45 minutes. It's like 50 minutes. It's not a short ride. Which meant that by the time we got to the hotel, he was wide awake again. He was wide awake and happy. He's like, "We're at the hotel, Daddy." I was like, "Yes,
let's go explore.
Let's run around." And so they just were. So we didn't get to sleep till like 1:30, like I said. And then, as I said, we had to get to the park by 8:30, I believe, was when our, like, you know, you get, again, if you stay on a resort property, you get 30 minutes early, and you got to take advantage of that.
Give me some hashtag real talk here.
Sure.
What was the mood as you and your lovely wife, Beth, tucked into bed at 1:30, having finally gotten the children to sleep? What was the mood like between the two of you? Was it a sort of like, well, honey, we're having this is the vacation of our dreams. Our children always remember this.
You know,
or
it was.
Did you guys want to like blow up the world?
We were. I mean, I don't want to speak for her, but I do think I think we were actually pretty much just like, holy, we did it. We made it here. We beat the system by throwing cash at the problem. We beat the system. We beat the system by throwing our credit card at the problem and taking care of it. So anyway, again, like I said, it all basically actually works out more or less even Steven. But it's definitely one of these things where it's like, don't want to have to deal with this.
Tell me about the magic.
So we get to the park. We get to the park.
Were their minds blown when they saw, like, the when he took the boat over or the monorail and they saw the castle? Were their little minds just like,
yeah, they were, I think,
oh,
they were,
this is real.
They were pretty impressed. They were like, wow, that's the castle from the cartoon at the start. I was like, yes, that is the castle from the cartoon at the start. And then the crazy thing. So here's the thing. Once we got to the parks, we absolutely crushed. I sent you the first day itinerary. Should I just
Please.
Read it?
Please.
Should I just read it to the people? So we get to the park. We do the line drop. That's what they call it when you get there early. And we went straight to, hold on. I'm pulling it up right now. We went to the Peter Pan ride, which is insanely popular for some reason, despite the fact that it's the dumbest ride.
It's adorable.
You're sitting in a little car and you go through the sky instead of on the ground, whatever. It's fine. So we did Peter Pan, and then we did It's a Small World, which is right across from there. Then we went to the Haunted Mansion, which is, like, again, just a few feet down the road. And then we did Pirates of the Caribbean. We did those four rides in the first, like, 50 minutes we were there.
Wow.
We just, boom, boom, boom,
what did the kids
boom,
think
boom.
Of each of them?
They loved it. They were a little bit freaked out by Haunted Mansion when the doors shut.
Because it goes down, right?
Because it goes down. Yeah, because it gets dark and it goes down. Yeah. And then there's, like, the scary guy who, like, shows a guy who's committed suicide. up in the ceiling. He's like, you could take my way out. And it's like a guy who's hung himself in the ceiling. It's like, okay, that's a little intense. Then we did the Aladdin carpet ride, which was fun. And then we walked up the Swiss Family Treehouse, which Charlie, my three-year-old, was just like, it was the most excited he's ever been, just running up and down this treehouse.
He wanted to live there, didn't he?
He was like, this is the greatest. This is the,
Our
you
house
love that.
Sucks, Daddy. Can't we live in a treehouse?
He loved that more than anything else. Then we went to go see Cinderella and Elena. I don't know who Elena is.
Elena of Avalor.
Yes, Elena of exactly. Yeah, I don't know how you know that, but Elena of Avalor. And then we did, right before lunch, we did the Seven Dwarves Mine Train, which... That is the thing that blew my three-year-old mind. He had a stupid grin on his face the whole ride.
I don't know if I've ever been on that one.
Oh, it's great. It's just a little roller coaster. It's a little roller coaster that's Seven Dwarves themed. You go through the mines and they're all singing hi-ho, hi-ho. And it's just a little roller coaster, a nice little roller coaster for him. And you won't be able to see this listening at home, guys, but his face was like this.
All right.
The whole time. So he loved that. Then we did lunch, and then we just kept doing rides. We did the Tomorrowland Speedway. We did the Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin, which is like a little shooting game.
Yeah, I hate that one. You come and do it with your hand hurting by the end.
No, I hate it
because I don't think it's really keeping score. I think those scores are all randomized.
No, I crushed it.
It's real.
I was in the 300s. I was nailing it. I was shooting things right in the middle. There was a show with Elsa. Then there was a little bit of a weather delay. Then we did a
live show with Elsa.
Eeyore was there.
Wait, Elsa or
you see what I?
Oh,
all right. And then we did the Barnstormer ride.
Vic is with us in spirit.
We did the Barnstormer ride. We did the Winnie the Pooh adventure. We did the Mad Hatter Tea Party.
Oh, Winnie the Pooh
we did
is
a
good.
Carousel. We did the aerial ride. We did teacups.
Didn't you have teacups in your itinerary?
We did the teacups. The Mad Hatter Tea Party.
Love that.
So anyway, the first day was an unadulterated triumph. We get there and we got to the park at 8:30. We left at like 5:30 because we were just exhausted. But even with that vaguely truncated schedule, like a 9-hour, we did 15 rides and attractions. It was crazy. It was crazy. So we were using, I don't know, have you used the Lightning Lanes? It's kind of like Fast Pass.
Last time I was there, they had just started Fast Passes, and Fast Passes were available to basically anyone.
Right.
You didn't have to pay in advance to get them.
Well, so the way it works now... This is my understanding. Again, Beth is the one who set all this up. The way it works now is it's basically $15 per day per ticket. So it was basically an extra $60 per day for the family. And the way it works is every hour or so you can redeem a Fast Pass, and you go and you basically hit the little button on your app and you get an hour window that you can go to the ride between. And the wait for the Fast Pass is the Lightning Lane is like 5 minutes. You go to the ride and it's like 5 minutes. That's what we did for Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, that first day we did that for Pirates of the Caribbean, the Seven Dwarves Mine Train, I think the Buzz Lightyear one, the Winnie the Pooh one, and the Ariel one. And I don't understand how people do the park without the Lightning Lanes. Yeah. It makes everything easier. So that was great. So the second day we did Hollywood Studios. Now, Hollywood Studios is where the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool. But even better than that, I think, for the kids was the Toy Story area.
Oh.
So they have like a Toy Story area where the best ride at the park is, or the best ride at this park, I think, might be the Slinky Dog roller coaster ride. Again, it's just like a little roller coaster for kids. It's better than like a kid roller coaster, but it's, you know, still pretty small. Second best ride. The best ride is Star Wars: Rise of the Resistance at the in the Galaxy's Edge area, which we did.
Did you take the kids on that? Was it too intense for them?
So, 3-year-old was too short, couldn't do it. So we did this other. So again, Disney has really got this down to a science. Shockingly, they've really figured it out how to.
Well, they're grooming children left and right, right, so they've gotten very good at it.
They've gotten very good at it. So the way Rise of the Resistance worked, because our 3-year-old was too short, but our 6-year-old was an appropriate height.
Just handed him to a nice man in an ice cream van, and he took care of your 3-year-old while you enjoyed the ride.
Exactly. No, Beth went on with my 6-year-old for a ride, and then they came out and we ride swapped. So I took the 6-year old on the get. She got to do it twice.
Ooh.
My 6-year old got to do this ride twice. Now, she didn't like it. It was terrifying to her. Because,
honey,
because the way
you
this,
have to go again. I'm sorry.
The way, so everybody at Disneyland is exceptionally nice all the time, right? Like, this is the thing about Disney World, is that it's just people being nice to little kids all the time. But on Rise of the Resistance, there's a section where you have basically been taken prisoner by the Imperial forces.
Ooh.
And they are like, stand here, move over here, shut your mouths. You're not with that group, you're with this group. And they're like doing like the whole Imperial officer thing, right? With like the kind of British accent. And
Vic was there and he'd be vaguely, like, I'm one of you.
Vaguely menacing. I was like, I'm here. I'm with you guys. These rebel scum, get rid of them. So she did not like this. It was a little too intense for her. And I think it was just because it was like real people being like slightly mean. She was not super into it. They're also like, they also aren't into Star Wars. They're not Star Wars.
Nobody
fans
is anymore.
They're too young. They haven't watched any of the movies. So anyway, on the second day we did the Toy Story Land. We went to a Cars thing.
Hold
the
on,
Lightning
how was your
McQueen's
bot,
Racing Academy.
How was your bot building? Don't skip that.
We haven't gotten to that yet. Okay. Then we did Rise of the Resistance, then we had lunch, and then we did Build a Droid. So we got two spots for the Build a Droid thing on the assumption that both kids would want to do it. Way too complicated for the 3-year-old to do. He would have had no idea. So I took him out of the line. He said he had to go to the bathroom. I was like, all right, we're going to go to the bathroom and go do something else. And then he had a meltdown because he was like, I want to do it. I want to build a robot. I want to build it. And I was like, you just said you had to go poop. Like, I don't want to go poop. I want to build a robot. I was like, all right, you can't. We're out of the line now. You can't do it. And so he's having a meltdown. I was like, look, we'll go buy you something else. We'll buy you something else. And that is when
throwing
he got...
Throwing money at the problem.
That is when he got his...
lightsaber.
Poe Dameron helmet. He got a toy helmet that he can wear proudly for the next 6 months till his head gets too big for it.
You should walk
anyway,
around doing crank yankers with it.
So that was fun. The droid is exceptionally cool, actually. It's like a little, it's like a little miniature thing. It's like got a gyroscope. I'm not 100% sure how it works, but it's got like a little gyroscope inside. And it's like BB-8. It rolls around. The head like kind of swerves back and forth. You can do it, like makes noises whenever in the park, when it would come near another droid, it would start like vibrating and making noises. They talk to each other.
That's pretty cool.
It was pretty cool.
Wow.
So anyway,
were there any regrets about not doing lightsabers?
No.
Cause you must've seen other people with their lightsabers.
Way more people had lightsabers than had droids. Like tons and tons of people had the lightsabers. I didn't want to do it for me. Because I had too much self-respect to do that, just to be walking around with a. But I took tons and tons. They have like a full size scale replica of the Millennium Falcon.
The Falcon, yeah.
There,
is
which
it awesome?
Is awesome. I mean, it's like the whole thing is awesome. So there are three Star Wars rides. I'm just rambling about Star Wars. There are three Star Wars rides at the park. There's Rise of the Resistance and Smuggler's Run, which are in Galaxy's Edge, and there's also a Star Tours. Which is older, right? But it's been redone, so it's all sequel shit. It's all like it takes you to the salt battle, the salt world battle in Last Jedi.
Oh, does it
and
take
like,
you to the
old
the planet
Lando
with Enfys Nest?
Old Lando is there. It's all new sequel stuff, which is whatever. It is what it is. So, but my official ranking would be. Star Wars Rise of the Resistance, which, again, is more of an experience than a ride. You, like, walk through certain things and, like, members of the Resistance take you to one area, then you get captured, and then the Empire is, like, trying to take you prisoner, and then, what's his name? Finn breaks you out, and John Boyega's got a bunch of things. Oscar Isaac has a bunch of, like, little scenes and vignettes. I can just imagine Oscar Isaac, like, sitting there counting the money in his head that he's making doing this because he's so... He's so disgusted with it all. So Rise of the Resistance, number one by a wide margin. I would say Star Tours is the second best ride. The problem with Smuggler's Run is that it's interactive in ways that make it almost like a game. Like the way so six people get on the ride. Six people have to ride it. It has to be six people because you have two people in the front who are steering and one person is steering up and down in an inverted axis. Ooh, and if you're not a
like
gamer,
on a plane. Yeah.
Yeah, or like a video game, right? It's an inverted axis. And if you're not a gamer and that is not intuitive to you, as the person flying our simulator is not a gamer and it was not intuitive to her, it could be a bit of a mess. So
I hope you corrected her and explained to her
Would never. I wouldn't even begin to imagine doing that. So, but it's a hard ride because there's too much interactivity, which I understand what they're going for. They want to be like, here, you get to pilot the Falcon. But it doesn't work.
All right. If you were with a group of all six who were your party, so you weren't like thrown in with some randos.
Yeah.
Would it have been awesome?
Maybe, but there's still just a lot. There's still just a lot going on. There's too much. They tried too hard with that one. They outthought themselves, I think. All right. So, but then we went to like more shows in this park. There's more shows to go to. We didn't get to do Tower of Terror because neither of the kids, I think, is tall enough. We just didn't want to.
Also, you shouldn't take a 3-year-old on a ride called the Tower of Terror.
You did the Haunted Mansion. It's the same basic thing.
No.
Right?
No, it is not. You know, don't. That's what the Mattis family would do.
So we didn't do Tower of Terror, and we didn't do the Aerosmith ride. There's like an Aerosmith roller coaster.
That's a giant roller coaster. You can't take your kids on the Rock and Roller Coaster.
It's just a giant roller coaster. We couldn't take the kids on that. So, but we did everything else. There's this great Mickey ride where you go like into a cartoon. Ooh. That's really well designed. It's really well imagineered. They did a fantastic job with that one. That one's the what's that? That's the
you said imagineered.
Yeah. What is that called? That's the Mickey.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. So anyway, that was day two. Day three, we went back to the Magic Kingdom and we did everything again. We hit some of the things we didn't do the first day. Splash Mountain,
Thunder Mountain Railroad.
We did Thunder Mountain Railroad.
What did they think of that? Did the kids
love
it?
Well, so Charlie too small. He couldn't do it. So I just it was just me and Katie on that one.
Did she love it?
It was. She did. She loved it. It was great. It's a great ride. And we got through that line. We didn't even have a lightning pass for that one. That was probably the longest wait of the day, and it was only about 45 minutes.
That's not
so
bad.
Like everyone was like, you know, oh, this is the most crowded weekend of the year. And it was definitely more crowded Sunday than it had been Friday. But I have to say, like, it is not crowded compared to, say, the Texas State Fair. It is not that kind of crowded. It was busy, but it was definitely not. It was not absurd or obscene.
Tell me something. Did you see any people walking around eating the turkey drumsticks?
Yeah, saw a few people doing that. I don't know where they got it from. I didn't even see the stand.
What
where they had those?
What sort of body mass index do you think
big.
Is going on?
Those were
there?
The big peoples. Those were the big people.
Was she a big fat girl? Wow.
Our dining experience the second day was the best day. So we had an early lunch because we had an early dinner. But we had an early lunch and we went and we sat in the Pinocchio restaurant. That's like right next to It's a Small World. I don't remember what it's like Pinocchio Village Town Time. I don't know something. But but we went there for lunch at like 11. We got a big table all to ourselves, and it wasn't super crowded because again it was 11. It was a little early for lunch, and then we had dinner at the castle. Sunday night. It was amazing. We were inside the castle.
I can't believe we spent time talking about the Peter Pan ride when you went inside the castle for
dinner. We were inside the castle for
dinner. Tell me everything about that, because I've always wanted to. You know, that's new. Didn't used to have anything inside the castle. You could never get in there.
It was it's prefix dinner. The guy is very much in character. Our waiter, he was, you know, treating the little lords and ladies to their foods. And it was nice. I can't even remember what they had. I had the pork tenderloin. Beth had the steak. It's a prefix thing.
Where in the castle is it? Is it up?
It's up.
On the main floor?
How
big is the dining room?
It's up two or three floors. The dining room size, you could probably fit 25 tables in there at a time. The guy said that they serve 800 people a night, something like that. Hmm. Or there, 800, or maybe it was more than that. Maybe it was 1,000. I can't remember. He gave us a number. It was a very large number because they just had people coming in and out all day there. Like, again, we booked like months in advance, and we got a 4 p.m. dinner on one of the 2 days we were there. So,
do you know about the secret club?
No.
There is. You,
is that where the Eeyore
keep
show
talking.
Is?
No, there is. Gosh, Father Harrison's the one who told me all about this. There is like a speakeasy, in Club 33.
Club 33. I've heard of this. Yeah,
and it's like members only. It's hidden. There's one in Disneyland and one in Disney World. I think it's $100,000 initiation fee, and then $30,000 a year. And it's supposed to be unbelievable.
I don't doubt it. Everything at Disney World was exceptionally nice and well done. Like, I have to say, I was really impressed. I get it now. I'm not a Disney person. I'm not I still think that the like childless folks who go there for their weekend vacations, you know, their week long vacations are a little bit weird. But like with kids,
you shut your
it
mouth.
It is. I know that's your thing. I know that's your, but like I can't imagine taking the kids anywhere else on that scale of a vacation again.
It's magic.
Right. Like it's one thing to go to like San Antonio for the weekend. It's one thing to go to like Houston for the weekend. But like on like a vacation where we're taking the whole family on like a we're getting away for 4 or 5 days sort of thing, I can't really see doing anything other than Disney World or Disneyland again. If we were doing it again, I would book 2 more days, one of which would just be a total down off day.
Yes.
At the resort that we could just like, we could go to the pool,
recharge,
and have
and
dinner.
That, yeah.
And I would do one day at Animal Kingdom.
Yeah. And go down to the Main Street USA or whatever the sort of slightly off property places, which is also a ton of fun. And there's like the adult place down there, Pleasure Island. You know, is Beth, having grown up in Southern California, was she a Disneyland girl growing up?
Yeah, she went to Disneyland all the time. Yeah.
So for her, what was her reaction comparing Disney, the land and the world?
I don't know. It's hard to compare them because Disneyland is just so much smaller.
Disneyland famously can fit inside the parking lot of Disney World.
Yeah, I mean, Disneyland is so much smaller. I mean, like it is an enormous amount just of land, just of like pure area that Disney encompasses in Orlando. It is crazy. I mean, like we were staying at the Coronado Springs Resort, and that was probably 20 minutes by bus from Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
It was like three or four minutes from Hollywood Studios. It's very close to Hollywood Studios, which, by the way, Hollywood Studios, perfect place to do in a day. Also great for adults. Like, so in Magic Kingdom, I don't think I saw a single stand, like, you know, just like a stand that served alcohol, right?
Right.
Didn't see that anywhere. In the restaurants, they had alcohol, but like in the, they're just like the stands around the, you know, the park, no alcohol. At Hollywood Studios, it was like every 200 feet.
Their audience.
It was like, here's where you come if you want to get blitzed on Star Wars themed.
That's what Epcot
liquor.
Is like. Epcot's the same.
So,
yeah.
So we didn't do Epcot. Is Epcot a thing that we need to do at some point?
When they're
older. I don't quite get Epcot.
Epcot is more for like tween kids.
Yeah.
Or maybe not even tween. Maybe like, you know, 10. Yeah, no, I guess that's tween, right? 10, 11, yeah. 12. Yeah, no, what you need to do when you go back, supposedly, is Animal Kingdom. People love Animal Kingdom. They think it's great.
I mean, Animal Kingdom is just one of these things where we were looking at, like, all right, we have 3 days. We have 3 park days. What 3 things do we want to do? And we figured we needed 2 days for Magic Kingdom, which is probably about right. If you want to do everything, you basically need 2 days. And we figured we could do Hollywood Studios in one day, and that worked out pretty much spot on. We were pretty spot
on. How was Hotel Coronado? Has that been renovated?
I mean, it was really nice.
It was super nice when it was built. It was that and the Grand Floridian were the two super nice ones, yeah. I think.
So this is, it is now rated as a mid-tier property, I think.
Ooh.
But it is, I mean, we loved it. It was great. There's a club level up on the 15th floor, Club Kronos, that has like breakfast in the morning. It has wedding appetizer sort of food for a dinner service, but also like wine and beer and stuff, which was, we did that one night. We did that the first night. We went up there and had dinner, and it was great. We savaged the bar. We got there with like 20 minutes left in the service and just got like armfuls of plates of food, like homeless people just running back to our table. With, you know, dragging bottles of wine and that sort of thing. So we liked it a lot. I would have liked to have had a day there just to like go around the actual resort hotel, apparently they have a very nice pool. We didn't have time to go to it. They have like four or five restaurants there. We didn't really go to any of the restaurants in the actual resort. We just went up to that Kronos Club for breakfast and coffee and dinner the one night. But it was nice. I mean, we just didn't spend much time there as a thing. It was mostly there for sleeping. The room itself was very, very nice. We had a suite, so the kids could be in one room and we were in another room. It was nice.
This is great, man. You are this is the American dream.
It really is.
The American dream is taking your kids to Disney World and sleeping in an on-property resort.
Yeah.
In a suite. That's Mad Men. You're done.
We don't go on a ton of like proper vacations. You know, we'll take like 4 days to go down to San Antonio. We did that last year, and that's fine. But this is like the first proper family vacation that we have taken as a total family unit. And it was expensive. It was worth every penny.
As a very wise woman said to me many years ago, once you have children, there are no vacations. There are only trips. You can take trips with children.
Yeah.
You don't ever take vacations. But I'm glad that this turned into like a memorable trip. This is something that I don't know about Charlie. Katie will remember this her whole life.
Yeah.
6 years old. She'll be 25 and remember this. Who knows?
Fingers crossed.
Who knows what Charlie will remember?
Yeah. He's still pretty young.
Yeah.
So Monday we flew back. We flew back. No incidents. There were no delayed or canceled flights. We took we flew back for free on United.
Yay.
So, you know, that was nice. And actually United was very, we got to the second leg, you know, from Houston to Dallas. It's a short flight. It's only 45 minutes, 50 minutes. And they don't have, there's no food service. And like, as I was sitting down, the steward overheard me saying, like, don't worry, guys, we're going to get you some pretzels here in a few minutes. And they're like, sorry, we don't actually have a food service on this. Hold on, let me see what we got in the back. And he just brought one of, like, the snack boxes.
Aww,
that, you know, usually cost like
$10.
Nice. He was like, here you go. Don't tell anybody you got it from me. You know, you got it on another flight. So that was very nice. Like United was, look, your plane has a mechanical problem. That sucks. But we got there, we got back, everybody was safe.
The truth is, the customer-facing people in the airline industry are almost without fail great.
Yeah, they were pretty
good. Right? I mean, your gate agents and your flight attendants, those people are fabulous.
Yeah.
It's the people you don't see.
the decision makers.
Anyway,
but it was good. Anyway, it was we've talked about Disney for like 35 minutes now.
So you had a gay old time in Disney.
It was great.
Speaking of,
no. All right, box office transition. Vic actually sent me a box office transition, but it's too blue. It's too blue to use. I can't do it.
It actually is. I made Sonny tell me what it was before we came on the show, and it's actually too blue.
I read it to JBL. I was like, I can't read this. I'll get canceled. I don't want to get canceled. So anyway, over the weekend, Fantastic Beasts, Secrets of Dumbledore made $42.2 million, which is very bad. That series, again, people talk about this.
You think that's bad? I think that's great for a series that I do not know anybody who's ever seen, thought, or talked about any of those movies.
Well, this is what I don't understand, right? Maybe we discussed this. No, I think I talked about this with Alyssa. So here's the thing about Harry Potter, right? The books are a genuine phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
The books were an enormous, huge cultural event.
Mm-hmm.
The movies made a lot of money, but they were basically just telling the stories of the books, and people were going to see them because they liked those stories.
Mm-hmm.
The Fantastic Beasts movies have no constituency anywhere, as far as I can tell. So people talk about the series being cursed and like, oh, they have to deal with the headaches of J.K. Rowling's trans stuff, and Ezra Miller is out there assaulting people all the time. Johnny Depp is in the first two movies for some reason, and he's a creep. And these movies are cursed. Nobody wants to go see them. I'm just like, I don't think the box office has anything to do with any of that. I just don't know anybody who had any interest in these movies or these stories. You're telling Harry Potter stories without Harry Potter. Who cares?
This is, in a way, I have always believed that this series was conceived purely to try to handle the letdown from the Harry Potter series being over. Because the people who loved those books so much were just desperate to have more. They just didn't want it to end, right? And so I was like, well, we could do some prequels, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no real reason for that. They don't need to exist.
The corporate logic for them, right, is Warner Brothers needs a big tentpole franchise aside from DC Comics, which they have, they don't know what they're doing with. So they're like, well, Harry Potter's huge. We've made $8 billion on the Harry Potter movies, right? Let's try that. And I get it, kind of, but...
So yeah. I have the answer of what they should have done, which is they should have waited for a 5-year interval and then began remaking the Harry Potter
series again.
And doing it well. Because the original Harry Potter series is terrible. It's terrible. Every one of those movies is bad.
You've said this before.
They're all done on the cheap, too. Warner Brothers nickeled and dimed that series, which was always shocking to me because it was always going to make, as you say, $8 billion. So just do it as a real series of movies now. And you know what? That buys you another like 16 years worth of content. And then you figure out what to do with your world of wizarding after that.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that could not possibly have been a worse choice than what they actually did.
Yeah.
Now,
how explicitly is Dumbledore gay in Fantastic Beasts?
I haven't seen it. I thought you went to see it. No. It's gay enough that they had to censor it for China.
This is one of those things where, J.K. Rowling made news when she, after it was over, was asked, in some interview somewhere after she had finished, and she said, yeah, I always actually thought Dumbledore was gay. And I just, didn't feel necessary to mention this. The minute she said that, being a pretty close reader of the Harry Potter series, it all instantly made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it also instantly made sense that Voldemort is also gay.
Mm-hmm.
And
for Dumbledore. Or not.
In the same way that Michael Morbius has a slightly younger friend who's obsessed with him and then decides that if he can't fuck him, he's going to kill him. I think that's basically the same principle.
So you've come around to my position on Michael Morbius. 100%. On the Morbius.
Yeah, I just thought it needed to be more.
More.
That would have been the most interesting thing in that movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so totally works and makes sense and also fits in with all the... My gosh, this is a series about British public school boys. Of course.
Right,
of course.
No, it makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense. So anyway, that's the big hit. We are talking about something else. We're talking about... So I wanted to
do a good 10 minutes on this.
I wanted to talk about Netflix, but I guess we'll save that for the bonus episode.
Yeah, Netflix and Thor. We'll talk about Thor, Love and Thunder.
Talk about Netflix, Thor, and Severance in the bonus.
Can't wait to take my victory lap on Netflix.
We've only got like 15 minutes here to talk about All the Old Knives. So All the Old Knives is streaming on Prime Video. It is one of two Chris Pine movies to drop like in the same weekend, which I thought was interesting.
What was the other one?
The other one was The Contractor, which co-stars Ben Foster and Kiefer Sutherland. He plays a contractor.
Like remodeling bathrooms and stuff?
No, like a military contractor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I guess that's also exciting.
Yeah. But All the Old Knives, the way I described it to JBL as I was pitching it was, it's basically like dumbed down John Le Carré. You basically have the way it's told in a split timeline. First timeline is in Vienna, I don't know, 10 years ago, where a terrorist attack has taken place, and the folks on the ground in Vienna have totally botched it, and they're not sure what happened. And then 10 years later, the guy who masterminded it has been captured and told the station chief that there is a traitor in their group. And then the movie splits back and forth between these two timelines, between Chris Pine trying to figure out who the traitor is. He's investigating the treason. So he is interviewing his old flame, Thandie Newton, as well as another old colleague who's played by Jonathan Pryce. And we cut back and forth between seeing what actually happened during that time period to unravel the mystery. I actually liked this movie a lot. I liked Chris Pine and Thandie Newton just talking to each other across a dinner table in an empty room. I don't know if you realize this, JBL, but this is what movies look like when they were shooting during COVID restrictions. This movie was shot at the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, when everything was still basically shut down. It was, if you watch this movie, you'll see that there are very rarely more than two people on screen at any time. It's basically two to four people on screen at any time. The main set is, again, an empty restaurant in somewhere up in wine country in California. And it is fascinating to me, just as a relic of a time when people were trying to figure out how to make movies when you couldn't have more than like 10 people on set at any given moment. On that level, it's interesting. I also just enjoy watching Chris Pine work. I think Chris Pine is a fascinating screen presence.
Best of the Chrises.
He's not the best of the Chrises.
He is 100%. He is the
Chris Pratt.
He is the most movie one, star of all the Chrises.
Chris
Pratt
simply,
will be gone in 20 years, and Chris Pine will be the leading man in movies until he's 75. He's Harrison Ford.
He wishes he was Harrison Ford. Chris Pratt is closer to Harrison Ford. No. Chris Pratt anchors two distinct giant franchises.
So does
Chris
Pine.
He is Harrison Ford.
Chris Pine anchors Wonder Woman.
Star Trek is a disaster. They have no idea what they're doing with that series.
He anchors all three of those.
He killed the Jack Ryan reboot single-handedly in one movie. And
that's not a bad movie, actually. That movie's not as bad as people say.
It's not good.
It's not good, but it's not as terrible as people say.
They immediately rebooted it with John Krasinski, and that was a big hit. For Amazon.
It's a lot better than the John Krasinski. I mean, a big hit for Amazon is Anyway, unimportant. So, Chris Pine is great.
Anyway, Chris Pine is great. I like Chris Pine a lot. He is very good in this.
Thandie Newton is fantastic.
Thandie Newton is fantastic. Look, here's what I like about this movie. It's 100 minutes. It is adults doing adult things, talking about adult subjects.
What sort of adult things, Sonny?
There's lovers.
Making love.
There's making love. There's
sweet love.
There's betrayal. There's vengeance. There's all sorts of great stuff.
If Vic were here, what do you think he would make of the fact that we have naked on screen a 49-year-old woman?
She looks good.
First of all,
he'd be into it.
Thandie Newton, the best looking 49-year-old on the planet.
The quadrants on this one would be
pretty
clear.
Can you believe she's 49?
No, I had no. I thought she was a little younger than
astonishing.
That. I knew she was. She looks good. She looks good. So anyway, quadrants A for length, A for nudity and sex, probably a B minus for violence. There's a little bit of violence, but not much. And I would say an A on plot. It's a little bit twisty turvy, but you know, twisty turny curvy.
It's good.
Topsy-turvy.
It's a good movie. It's can we talk spoilers?
Since this sure, let's talk spoilers.
So, The Old Knives is like clandestine service Romeo and Juliet, and it doesn't function really well as a whodunit because everybody should know within the first 4 minutes. Who did it, right? I mean, this was obvious to me. The minute Lawrence Fishburne says to Chris Pine, you know, we captured what's-his-face, Yashar Ali. Not actually Yashar Ali. We captured this bad guy.
This Chechen.
Chris Pine's reaction to that tells anybody who knows anything about spy novels, oh, he's the bad guy. He's the mole. So it's not really a question of whodunit. The question is why, which you don't understand until the very, very end. There are some little bits again, but it earns everything in that the twist when you get it is entirely explicable by what we have been shown on screen. There, you know, everything does make sense. You have the, you know, my metaphor for all this is always like the tumblers on a lock falling into place. You know, as that happens, you say, oh, yes, okay, all of these things make sense. And it gets at a trope from spy novels, which I love. Have you read Smiley's People recently?
Relatively recently, like maybe 2 years ago.
Right. So Smiley's People is the end of the Carla trilogy. And the whole setup is that we have the Russian spy master Carla, and John Smiley, who has been put out to pasture, is called back in because they finally have a way to get to Carla. They have discovered a weakness, which is that Carla has a daughter hidden away in an asylum in like Switzerland. But the entire book is about how having this knowledge and the ability to blackmail Carla is useless unless they are able to communicate with Carla, right? The spy craft is simply being able to present the demand to the guy, because having this power over him is useless if you can't tell him you have this power over him. And that is the tradecraft which goes into the turning of Chris Pine's character, right? It isn't enough that, like, you know, hey, we know that he has this lover. They have to lure him to a place where they can compromise him. And that's where the movie sort of all turns at the end. And it's great. I mean, look, there's also like a before sunset or before sunrise aspect to it, where you've got like two really interesting actors just talking about history and their personal history together. And I don't know, you have two really strong and interesting actors in Thandie Newton and Chris Pine, and just enjoyable to watch, right?
I mean, we talk a lot about there not being enough movies for adults. And I said to Vic, you know, I feel like this is a movie you would like.
Yeah, I mean, the CGI overload at the end is a little much.
Yeah, when the atom bomb goes off.
Yeah, and then it was a real problem. One universe, but then in the multi, you know.
Yeah, it is a movie. Again, it's a movie for adults. We talk about how we don't get any movies for adults, and it is interesting to me that of the two Chris Pine movies, this one is clearly better. Like, of this, between this and The Contractor, which again came out the same weekend, this one is clearly better. It's clear, like, it's better on every level, just in terms of dialogue, plotting, acting, structure, everything. It works on every level better than The Contractor, which is kind of a dumb action movie that thinks it's smarter than it is, which is the worst kind of dumb action movie. And of these two, The Contractor is the one that was in theaters. The Contractor is the one that cost $20 to rent on VOD. And this one is the one that went straight to streaming. You know, Amazon bought it for probably, you know, a couple million bucks. Probably didn't spend a ton of money on it.
Stunning to me.
And it you know, is a, I mean, I for the record, I have no idea how much this movie cost for Amazon to buy. Maybe they spent $20 million on it. I don't know. But it is superior in every way. And the fact that it has no chance to be in theaters, no chance to be a, like, real viable financial property for anyone is super depressing, because it's good.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Did you feel like the end is a cheat? So the maybe not a cheat. Maybe what I mean is the story looking away at the end. So Chris Pine, his character, has been dispatched to find the mole and told to eliminate the mole. And so he is then working with an independent contractor hitman who is going to kill Thandi Newton's character for him. He does not understand until the very end that he himself has been trapped and that the agency knew the entire time that he was the mole and that he is basically in a kill house. And in Thandi Newton's, he's being poisoned. All of which, by the way, again, makes perfect sense. It is not a surprise. The whole movie, you're thinking to yourself, something's not right here. Something's not right. But at the very end, his contractor is waiting for the go, no-go to kill Thandi Newton, at which point Chris Pine, who is dying of poison, cannot tell him yes or no, and he's desperately trying to say no, and the contractor just decides that means let her live.
Well, he,
the noir version of this, he can't say it. He dies in anguish knowing that he can't make his voice work, and the contractor then decides, I got to off her too.
Well, the way it is set up, it didn't feel like a cheat, because I think they did a good job of setting this up. There are two separate sequences where the hitman says, you give me the yes and I do it. So it works within the text of the movie, but it would be a nastier piece of work if it was the opposite.
It becomes a much darker movie.
You have to give me the no, and I will pull away. And if you don't give me the no, I assume I'm good to go. That would have been a nastier way. I don't think it blinks exactly, but it definitely it's a different, that's a different sort of movie. As you say, that's more of a noir than what this is. Which
this is not, again, really a noir. Like this has a lot about life, and I mean, it's a love story in a lot of ways, right?
I mean, do you think it's wrong to describe this as dumbed down La Carré? I mean, that's kind of how it felt to me.
I don't think it is at all.
Simplified. I mean, it's maybe mean. It's simplified La Carré. It's not.
But this is a genre where even the middling stuff can be pretty good. Was that the last movie Philip Seymour Hoffman did was a spy movie in which he's a German spy master. I'm trying to remember something man,
I'll
most
look it up.
Dangerous man, a most wanted man, something like that.
Most wanted man. I think that might be it. Yeah.
Anyway, this feels a little bit like that in that it's a nice piece of, so again, maybe just I'm a sucker for spy novels. Like, they are my candy, and more so even than sci-fi. And so I really like movies that take that on too. And this is a nice job with that.
Yeah. A Most Wanted Man. Great movie. Rachel McAdams in that.
That is right. So that movie just got totally lost. Yeah. And it's really quite good. And he's fantastic in it.
Yeah. Also La Carré. This was not La Carré. This is a.
So,
it was based on a novel by a spy.
If you are a grown up, you should see this movie. Go
see it.
Go see
at home
the old
on your
knives.
Couch.
And it was good. I really liked it.
It's good. Good movie. Thumbs up. Thumbs up.
Two thumbs up. Both of us.
To all the old knives.
And you know what? Vic would have liked it if he was here.
Vic would have liked it too. We'll say three. We'll go three thumbs up on that one. All right, that's it. Spirit of the week, correction, shout outs. Anything?
Nothing. I'm just drinking Diet Coke, trying to stay awake. Do you have
I got a coffee because I'm gonna edit this after the show. Yay. So we're just drinking caffeine. All right, that is all the time we are giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sonny Bunch at Victorino Manis. Tell Vic how much you missed him, how boring the show was without him. Please do. We want him back next week. I'm sure he will be back next week. He, as we said, he just needed a he needed the cure for wellness. That's what he needed. Hmm. Did you ever watch that movie?
No.
That's a movie that would kill on one of the quadrants. Okay, again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Hi. I think I hear G Money downstairs.
You have to go?
Yeah, you know what? He and Flash are sharing a room right now for the rest of their lives. And it's a brand new experiment. We're going to see how that's going. One of them is very excited about it, but I will have to go and check.
I can hear him in the background. I can hear something going on back there.
I'm sure it's fine.